Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. It is popular political talk that the interests of business and government are oppositional. So one commonly hears business representatives and politicians call for reduction in government and lowering of taxes as ways to encourage entrepreneurship. As often is the case, there is a flip side to this coin that's demonstrated by the experience of Spencer Williams, president of Westpaw, and Al Dibert of the Montana Manufacturing Extension Center. Spencer and Al, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground. Spencer, let me begin with you. First, what is Westpaw?
Westpaw Design is a manufacturer of fabric, dog and cat toys, and bedding. And we're located in Bozeman, Montana, where we make about 99% of our product here.
Now, manufacturing and design of pet toys, we're talking the kind of squeaky things that...
You're talking the squeaky dog toys, the catnip-filled, bell-ringing cat toys, and the plush beds for dogs and cats. Yes.
Oh, so beds too.
Oh, yes. You got to have them, keep them comfortable.
Okay. We'll talk more about the specifics of the business, but this is a manufacturing business. We're here in your new plant. We'll discuss that. Give me a little bit of background. Where'd you grow up, and what led you to be interested in running your own substantial business?
Well, I grew up in Columbus, Montana. I went to high school in Billings. And I guess growing up on a ranch and having a father who was also in manufacturing led me to appreciate kind of getting your hands on a product. And having just been in sales in the past, it was time for me to get back to kind of my roots of doing something where everybody could say, we helped make this at the end of the day, and I really wanted that. So I was looking for something to do in the Bozeman area after moving back to Montana and heard that a company called Pet Pals was for sale in Livingston. And it was a very small manufacturer of dog and cat toys at the time. And she had started the company about 8 years prior. And we bought her company in the designs and started increasing the number of products in the line and increasing our dealer base, and it's grown very much since then.
Now, you said you had a background in sales. Was that for your dad's company?
No, I had never worked for my father. I was actually selling financial research to money managers out east.
Okay, that's more obscure to me than pet toys,
it
so
is.
I won't go there.
That sounds all right.
Okay, but now you come back, you buy a business. We don't think in Montana or Wyoming much in terms of manufacturing. This is a big plant. The company you bought was much smaller?
That's right, yes.
So what led you to the idea? How mathematically driven was your idea that you could expand? Did you do a lot of market research, or is this just a hunch kind of a thing?
Well, I think for any entrepreneur, hunch plays a big role. But I had looked into the growth of the pet industry, and this is back in 96. And I saw that there were national pet chains that were growing very rapidly, had just had IPOs. And I thought, gosh, if these companies are growing so quickly, there must be some market there. Also, the major chains, Walmart and so forth, were increasing their pet sections. The biggest thing for me was the fact that the baby boomers' children were leaving home in the coming years, and those baby boomers were the wealthiest class of individuals in the United States history. They were tending to buy pets to replace the loss of their children, and they would need high-quality, handcrafted toys and beds to complement those pets. So I thought that'd be a great opportunity for us to grow this business. So there was some market research into it, but certainly a lot of it was gut feeling. And for me, I wanted to get into something that was manufacturing, and I really, really grew up with a love for pets. Always had pets on the ranch, and I always wanted to do something that would make people happy. Making pet toys makes people and their pets happy, so it was really fun. Yeah.
Tell me a little about the specific challenges or advantages of manufacturing in Montana. You say you wanted to come home, but if the problems were insurmountable, and I can think immediately of the long shipping distances of any physical product, you couldn't make it work. Obviously, you decided you could make it work. You've been at it now 6 years. What's your experience in summary form of the realities of manufacturing in Montana?
Well, Brian, you brought up a really good point about transportation. That was the biggest challenge. Is how to get the product out of Montana to our dealers or pet stores across the country in a very quick way. So we did that by having immediate shipping and working with our UPS, FedEx, our shipping companies to get the product to those markets very quickly. The benefit of working as a manufacturer in Montana is the work ethic in Montana is absolutely the best. People are proud of the work that they do in Montana. They want to make a quality product. And a challenge is something that I think Montanans as a whole thrive on. This is a pioneer state. That mentality will not go away anytime soon. And so our quality is our hallmark here at Westpaw, and the company is founded on the people making that quality product. So that's the real benefit of being in Montana. As I said, with the baby boomers, they also wanted to buy something unique. Buying a pet toy made in Montana is unique.
And it kind of fits. Feel there's a cachet in that made in Montana with either the in your sales pitch, developing your clients that sell your product, or do you get feedback from them that their customers react to that made in Montana thing at all, or is it more the quality and the innovative design you put into your toys?
It is more the quality and the innovative design than the made in Montana. The made in Montana makes us unique, and that is a selling point.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if the made in Montana mark had a more distinct recognition nationally, and it was of high quality products.
Now, we interviewed John Kramer, who is chairman or president of the Great Falls Development Authority and is a believer in encouraging businesses to locate based on hard-nosed analysis of what any particular jurisdiction has to offer. In his opinion and experience, and he did a lot of this in North Dakota, 80% of business decisions are based on labor availability, quality, and cost. Montana is known as a low-wage state. I walked through your plant with you a few minutes ago. You got happy people working here. It's a very pleasant work environment. We'll talk more about how that came about. But what do you do in terms of wages and compensation?
Wages are really important here at Westpaw Design, as they should be for any company. As a manufacturer that's competing with imports, primarily from China, cost is our biggest challenge. We've had to work very hard to raise our wages over the years. We started in Livingston paying people minimum wage. We now start people at around $6.75 and get them to about $8 within their first year. We work very hard to get wages up quickly. And as people continue to add value in their increasing years of service, they're rewarded on the value that they do add.
Now, you also have a profit-sharing program?
We do. I firmly believe in profit-sharing programs because of the reward that employees get from doing an ever better job for the company.
Can you describe it in a nutshell? What does your profit-sharing program look like?
Our profit-sharing is pretty simple. It's 100% company money that is given at the end of the year based on the profits of the company. It can be 0 to 15% of their earnings for the year. That percentage goes into a retirement account that is federally approved, tax-deferred, and then they vest over a period of time into that money.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% managed by the company. It's 100% company money.
One other question before we get to your relationship with what I am going to call MMEC, because I can't say Montana Manufacturing Extension Center too many times. You mentioned cost and Chinese competition. I just read an article in the New York Times about a toy manufacturing firm and a woman, young woman, who died of literally overwork. She was paid 12 cents an hour working 60 days straight. Pretty tough conditions.
That's tough.
In terms of price, labor has to be a major component of your costs. You're competing against where people are being paid 12 cents an hour. What is the differential on the shelf between the cost of your product, let's say, and a similar, obviously there's some distinctive qualities to your product, but a similar product from China now?
A dog bone is a great example. A bone that squeaks is pretty much a bone that squeaks.
Okay.
Our bone that squeaks will go for about $11 retail at a pet store. A bone that squeaks made from in China would go for about half of that, probably about $5.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a huge differential. Now you're talking the same size. They both squeak. The people are willing to buy ours because of the quality. I think because it is made in the United States, specifically in Montana.
We won't have time to go into this, but clearly your labor cost and that labor cost is major difference. And I'm going to guess that the $5 differential is not explained by strictly labor, but somebody's making some profit on that $5 Chinese toy. I'm guessing their cost of goods is a lot lower as a percentage of the product than yours.
That's true. there's also many different levels of distribution when it comes mm-hmm. from China or anywhere overseas. You have the immense shipping costs, but then it would enter a distribution channel which has a markup, and then the retailer channel which has a markup. We've eliminated the distributor markup by going direct to the pet stores. That's more work on our behalf,
okay.
but it allows us to compete.
Okay, let's talk about Al Dibert and MMEC. Al, first tell us where you came from and what you do, and then we'll talk about your relationship with Westpaw Design.
I grew up in Billings, and kind of like Spencer, I had kind of followed my father's footsteps in a way. He was an engineering professor and kind of a private engineering consultant, and encouraged me to study industrial engineering at MSU, and did so and enjoyed it and got a bachelor's and a master's degree and started working for a company called Dana Design, which was kind of like Westpaw in that it was a sewn products company. We competed with products made overseas, and over time we sold that company to a larger company and stayed there about a year, and then started working for MMEC about 6 years ago.
Okay, MMEC, we've said what it is in terms of what its name is, but what does mm-hmm. it do and who funds it?
Okay, what MMEC does, you can think of, most of us are familiar with Ag Extension for farm and ranch, and that's been a very successful program.
Giving expertise, technical expertise to farmers and ranchers that can help them do a better job of conservation and productive operations.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a very strong argument that says that small manufacturing is the primary economic driver in this country. And our country, compared to others, has almost no manufacturing extension help. And so this program started about 6 years ago. It's funded by NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
That's a federal program?
Mm-hmm. Yep, under the Department of Commerce. And they give us about half of our money. And another quarter or so comes from the state of Montana through Montana State University. University of Montana hosts an engineer.
What do you mean hosts an engineer?
There's an engineer who works at the U of M campus.
Okay.
An MSU grad. Gets interesting. But
all right.
We get the rest of our funds through fees that we charge for our services. NIST does require that we charge for our services.
Okay, so Spencer, in working with you, pays something, or Westpaw Designs pays for your services.
That's correct, yep.
What do you do? What kind of advice do you give, and how do you get your clients?
Okay, how we get our clients usually is through word of mouth, almost always. And what we do, there's six of us in the state, and each of us has a background in operations management or production management. Okay, so we've made plenty of mistakes and had plenty of successes. And what we do when we work with clients is we say, what manufacturing challenges do you have? And there's usually a way with our background and education experience that we can help the client address that challenge.
All right, now let's get specific. How did you guys run across each other?
Al first came to me because he had heard my name from somebody up at the Department of Commerce. I was talking to them about export. And Al comes into my office after calling several times and says, I work at the university. I'm an engineer with this Montana Manufacturing Extension, and I'd like to help you with your manufacturing.
But what was your reaction to that?
I said, you work at the university? You don't know what I need. And Al said, believe me, I know what you're thinking. I'm a Montanan too, but I can really help you. I've been there and done that. And that's how it started. I really had to kind of hear Al out to make sure that he had practical experience that he could apply.
Now, you had no particular personal experience in manufacturing, is that correct?
Personally, no.
So you were faced with just how do you make this stuff, I mean, as a part of your business. So what were you doing? You're just kind of winging it, or did you have consultants come in? What were you doing?
Thankfully,
I'm not sure what the answer's
going like, to be. I like the winging it comment. That's good. I, thankfully, had bought, like I said, a smaller company, and she had good systems in place. She was making the product already.
Okay.
So I could come in and kind of observe and see which things I wanted to change. And that period of 6 months, at the end of that period is when I actually met Al, and I had some ideas about what I wanted to do to change and make us more successful so that we could lower our costs. Al came in with more ideas from his experience, and he could really augment my thoughts by saying, I worked in a sewn product company before. This is the kind of machinery you might want. This is the kind of systems you might want to put in place. And he had some very concrete ideas. Between the two of us, we kind of picked what was most important to the company at the time and started working on those projects, and that's continued for 6 years.
Okay, I see we're about halfway through the show. Let me just say, if you tuned in late, you're listening to Home Ground. We're talking with Spencer Williams of Westpaw and Al Dibert of the Montana Manufacturing Extension Center about their collaborative relationship. So I'm hearing you say he knew what he was talking about. I mean, he had experience in sewing manufacturing and was able to come in and lay out concrete proposals for you to consider it. Now, Al, let me ask you this. We walked through the plant, and I noticed there was what I'm going to call a high-tech sewing machine. I mean, it's sewing dog bone shapes fast and precisely, and it looked like an expensive piece of equipment. I think you said, Spencer said it would cost $45,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, that was your proposal?
Yeah, I'd been begging him for a couple of years to put in one of those.
So. Okay, and what was his response? You got to be crazy or what?
Initially, I think he said you got to be crazy just because of the price on it.
Okay.
But we've been talking the whole time about competing with cheap labor. Mm-hmm. And a great way to compete with that is to take a bunch of the labor steps out. And another challenge in Montana, as well as this country, are workers' comp expenses and things like that. And the cleaner the work environment, the better the equipment, the safer it is. And that's what this piece of equipment really helps out with. And it's programmable. And it sews what you tell it to sew very quickly, very accurately. And it does take quite a bit of volume to make a machine like that work out.
Okay, so, Spencer, let me ask you this. You've got a recommendation. What was your reaction? $45,000 piece of equipment. Now it's there. Initially, I gather you didn't want to do it. What changed?
Well, initially, I didn't have the money to put into that kind of machine, and I didn't have the volume to make it work. And Al knew that. He was the one who came to me with a financial model, looked at my product, and how many units I was manufacturing of the compatible toys that would go onto that machine, and said, here's the production volume you would need to make this mm-hmm. a machine that you can actually afford. When we hit that target level, Al did all the research on what machine we should buy, helped us because he had experience there, hands-on. He had seen what worked. We bought the machine, brought it in, and sure enough, it's paid for itself from day one. So his analysis was really what tipped the scale.
Now, Al, that example illustrates something, several things to me. One, you guys have a relationship over time. You didn't just come in once and say, here's some ideas,
right,
buy.
Yeah.
So I'd like you to explain that a little bit. But also, I'm surprised to hear you're doing sort of financial analysis. Mm-hmm. You're not just saying you need the piece of equipment, but you actually go in and look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty complete package.
I think that's a fair statement. And what most of us do, we do financial packages, we do quality systems, we help with scheduling, employee training, human resource issues, because there's a lot more to manufacturing than just putting the product together. There's a lot of other systems and things like that in place that are very challenging, especially as a company's growing. Those challenges mount quickly, and the mistakes you make are more significant. And so when we put together a financial model on buying a piece of equipment, we're not salespeople. We're not out there selling equipment saying, I think you need mm-hmm. one of these because it would look nice on your floor. Mm-hmm. We're saying there's a way to do this better to help you become more competitive, and that's what MMEC is all about, is helping manufacturers become more competitive.
You mentioned, Al, clean workplace, good working conditions or something like that. When you walk through this plant, it's kind of standout from my standpoint. It's very mm-hmm. light. There's excellent light, good
that's
atmosphere.
Right.
People are unmistakably cheerful.
That's right.
And they even smiled at you, which surprised me, because I think often you bring in somebody who's going to encourage change that's not necessarily well received by people. Let me ask you, Spencer, what's going on?
Well, it's certainly a unique relationship. When an engineer or a consultant walks into any company, employees should get nervous because they change things and nobody likes change. People here like to see Al or other people from MMEC because we have profit sharing. They know that Al's ideas have really helped this company grow, mm-hmm. helped it become more profitable. So when he walks in the door, they're thinking, here comes another good idea. It's going to take some work to get there, but here comes a good idea. So they like seeing an engineer, a consultant such as Al or his associates walk in the door because they know there's going to be real value added. It's not just one of these management ideas that really never helps. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's practical. It's going to be efficient. They're going to appreciate it.
Al, going back to you, you pointed out different things that you recommended in terms of good lighting, both on that expensive sewing machine and overhead, and then there was a location of the, I guess, I'm going to call it the fabric from which some mm-hmm. of the toys and beds are made. You put it in or suggested they put it in a way that was convenient for the
right.
staff to get to it. What makes you think those things make for better productivity or happier employees or what? Is that scientific data or is that your experience or what?
I think it's everybody's experience. You get what you pay for. And in terms of this facility and the few others that are like it that are very clean, there's a lower cost of turnover with employees. It costs more to put up a place like this, and it's cost Spencer and his management staff quite a bit of effort to put the good lighting in and good pieces of equipment. But they've all lived it before. I used to work with some of these people at Dana Design, and we've got a relationship that goes back, 10, 12 years. And we learned there when we moved from a poor location to a nice location to take care of people, keep it clean with good lighting. And there are intangible benefits. But again, when you say, is there scientific research? There is scientific research that would tell you that you're going to pay regardless. Why not pay up front and treat people well, and give them a good, clean work environment, and expect people to do a good job, and you'll get it back in terms of productivity.
Spencer, you look like you want to add to that.
Well, I think that Al hit it on the head. If you don't have a good work environment, you're not going to get people who are committed to the company's goals and mission. And that is a tough thing to win people over to what the company is doing, unless you really are concerned about the employees and their whole being.
How common is that perception in your experience in the business community? I frankly don't hear that all that often.
There are certainly people who share that philosophy that you take really good care of your employees, do everything you can for them. There are people who don't, and those people have been successful as well. There's no doubt about it. When I come to work, I am happy to see my employees. They are happy to see me. I like what I do. They like what they do. Why wouldn't you want to spend 8-10 hours a day in that environment? And I'm still going to be a successful business owner. They're still successful employees. And together, we're going to succeed as a company. It's a win-win all the way around. Al said it right. You're going to pay it one way or the other. If you don't have a good environment, you're going to have high turnover. That's an intangible cost that people never think about. If you don't have a safe, clean work environment, you're going to have higher workers' comp issues. We try to hit it from all fronts and just be everything that we can be to our employees.
I noticed we were talking about you used some home sewers, and you told me something that surprised me, that these are not contract employees, which is a growing phenomenon in American business, from American publishing to all sorts of fields, where people don't work in the shop, they get no benefits, but you put people on as employees.
We do. I, again, just believe that if somebody has contributed to my work environment, they need to get benefits from working here. So we have 7 people who are working out of their homes and have been. One of them has been with us for 10 years. They're working out of their homes, manufacturing our toys right there. They will be getting paid for their work and piece rate, but they also get profit sharing because they're employees. As long as they work over 500 hours, which is a minimum standard, they'll get profit sharing. If they're working full-time, they'll get medical. They'll get paid vacations. We offer 2 weeks of paid vacation in the first year, 3 for every year after increasing.
So in sum, they're treated like anybody else that works for you, provided they put in the hours.
And even if they're part-time, they're still going to be part of our profit-sharing retirement plan. As long as they're tenured here at 3, 5, and 10 years, we give them paid vacation so they can go with their family somewhere in the country and get out of Montana if they want to. And that doesn't matter if they're part-time or not. Mm-hmm. We want to take care of them because there's a win-win there as well. We need high-quality work, and they're unsupervised in their homes. We get the high-quality work because they believe in the company. They get steady, consistent work. Brian, let me give you one other concrete example of how MMEC has saved us tangible money here at Westpaw Design. They have, for years, encouraged us to reduce our inventories. We have always run a larger inventory because it takes less management time to just keep higher inventories. My commitment to same-day shipping to my customers is one of the things that we're known for. So I was not willing to cut our inventory and lose our same-day shipping. Al finally came up, after years of observation, with a good program that actually is helping us cut our inventories. We actually, in 1 year, have succeeded in shaving off over 200,000 in inventory, 40% reduction in inventory in 1 year. And that has...
200,000 in dollars?
In dollars. We haven't laid off one employee. We have seen increased profits, increased cash flow, and that is a tangible benefit that would help any manufacturer, period. If you can reduce your inventories and not hurt your reputation, you're winning.
Yeah, that's an amazing achievement. Let me ask you this. I mean, it's clear cumulatively this relationship has shortened your learning curve, saved you a lot of money. Is that fair?
That is fair to say.
What do you pay for this service?
Well, we pay a couple different ways. We can
in
do
pet toys. I know everybody gets a pet toy. Al's got a whole bunch of them in his pockets right there.
We do pay an hourly sometimes. If Al's working on a project where he's helping us train internally here, we'll pay him an hourly of $60 an hour. Also, if it's a longer-term project, they'll give us a proposal, and sometimes those proposals can run over $1,000, can run several thousand dollars. Depends on how much work and how much expertise they're putting into it.
Could you get it in the private sector, the same advice?
Well, you could if you were in a different state. Montana has very few industrial consultants, manufacturing consultants. What I like about these folks is that they're filling a void in Montana, helping the smaller manufacturers succeed, and the tax dollars that are coming into this program to help me afford these rates are coming back into the Montana economy manyfold, and that is success.
I understand that. Let me ask you this. We're in a climate of, I started by talking about tax cuts, reducing the Montana government is in a financial crisis. We're in the process of cutting services to poor people who are mentally ill, as well as poor people who are just physically ill. These services are being cut. Senator John Cobb, Republican, just wrote a letter saying he thought it was unconscionable. Because there have been a bunch of tax cuts that he feels could be restored to provide these services. Now, how do you, and I understand your point that this is an efficacious use of tax dollars in the sense that it's generating some kind of multiplier effect. I think a straight fiscal conservative might say it is a subsidy because you're getting a service at less than you'd have to pay for it in the market, I'm going to guess, and it's saving you money. How would you respond to that as a citizen or taxpayer any way you want?
I would say absolutely. When a subsidy can help a business grow, I'm all for it. That's what tax money should be used for, is to help private enterprise be more successful. And that does not mean helping the owner become a multi-billionaire. It means helping hire more employees, raise wages, increase taxable property. Building this building is adding a lot of tax value to this town. I just got my tax bill 3 days ago.
And you're still smiling.
Well, you know, you got to pay for it. So believe me, I'm giving a lot more back to the economy than I'm taking from the government in taxes. So I do not believe we should be cutting left and right in this government. I think we need to look at programs that have proven track records of success. We need to be looking at people who are not insured. The children in Montana, who only 11% are getting supported for early childhood education. We need to support more than 11% of those children. We shouldn't just be cutting taxes left and right. It doesn't matter if you're in private enterprise or healthcare or education. We need to look at what works and support those. And if subsidies are what makes West Paw more successful so we can give back to the community, great. As a taxpayer, I'll use it.
I regret to say, gentlemen, we're out of time. And I want to thank you very much for being with us on Home Ground.
You're welcome, Brian.
Welcome, Brian.
To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is a pre-recorded Artemis Common Ground production. Sandra Dalpagetto, producer. All opinions expressed are solely the responsibility of Home Ground. We welcome your suggestions for new programs. Write to us at P.O. Box 748, Helena, Montana, 59624, or email at brian@artemisgroup.org. This program is in part made possible by a grant from the Montana Committee for the Humanities.